If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in every Wednesday at 5:30 Pacific Standard Time and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Astar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light of the most radiant one. I'm Commander Lady Athena, also called Ashtar Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Galactic Command. This evening, beloveds, well, first of all, I wanted to wish everyone of our Jewish brethren Happy Hanukkah. This is the Festival of Lights, and I was privileged to be in Israel in 2003 and also in 1990, so I got to experience the beautiful Festival of Lights. Anyway, tonight I want to look at evoking the particles of perfection, how to shift energy, how to live at a higher rate of vibration, and how some of the things that are happening in the cosmos are affecting our planet as it transforms into a new manifestation. First of all, the premise here is that we live in a very rich mix. On Earth, we have the confluences and combustions of colliding disparate energy fields. This is a good thing because it enables out of the collision of different energy fields the birthing of something entirely new and entirely different. Some shows back I spoke about how to shift the assemblage point, and that the assemblage point is that place that we tend to hang out in our consciousness field, and how an accident or a sudden shock or a sudden blow, a fall, anything of that nature tends to shift our assemblage point. Many times people who have had near-death experiences or what they term walk-in experiences, and I'm not certain that that's actually what happens to them, but as a result of an accident, very often a person will come back with a very new perspective on life, almost as if they were a different aspect of themselves or even a different soul manifestation. Maybe I just said the same thing in a different way, but I guess we can figure that out on our own. But suffice it to say, shocks of any kind tend to shift us into a different way of perceiving. And that is always good because we tend to keep recreating the same things if we keep living in the same ways and adopting and expressing in the same habit patterns. So anything that gets us out of a rut is very, very good, spiritually speaking. Now, in this mix that we have two energy fields. We have the particles of chaos and destruction, or entropy. We have the particles of perfection and centropy. So centropy is the electrification of matter. This is what gives life, vitality, and sustainability to form. Entropy is the departure of that life element or that electrical charge. It begins to dissipate and wind down and collapse in on itself, and eventually it dies out. So we want to constantly be evoking in our own lives, in our own mind, in our own consciousness, whatever brings in vitality, electrification. We are electrical beings. We function very much like electrical beings in this world. We have the charge of the positive and the negative within our electrons. And as we begin to increase the vibratory spin of those electrons, we begin to engage that third factor, which is that which we have called the ascension factor, or the, well, it's an energy that hasn't actually officially been discovered in science yet, but they're closely approximating what could be called the living word, or the Ek, or that energy which is the energy of the living spirit, the one behind all manifestation. And it's that energy that we are now seeking to triangulate with as we as we find that middle way between the polarizations of negative and positive, and we find that upward current that partakes of both of them but doesn't get snagged in either one. So in that process, we are looking tonight also at the fifth dimension. There's been so much written about it and spoken about it. I would like to take a different approach tonight, perhaps, than you've heard. And I want to speak about the influences of the far-off worlds. And when I speak of the far-off worlds, I'm speaking of life in the greater cosmos, some of which hasn't been discovered, some of which is in a state of dormancy or latency or potentiality. And some of it is beginning to literally transform our solar system and our planet. What I'm speaking of are planets that are either just coming into incarnation, and these would be planets that have just been discovered, and planets that are standing in the wings, so to speak, getting ready to emerge on the stage that is being discovered. There are, according to the Tibetan Master DK, approximately in our solar system, 115 planets that are out of incarnation. A planet, like any other person or entity, goes through cycles of birth and maturation, decline, and death. And when a planet in the lower realms goes through death, it is like our moon. Our moon is actually a planet that is in what we would call the decay process or the death process. However, having said that, it is now beginning to receive energies from a planet that was discovered. I'm not certain which one it is, because for a long time it didn't show up in our astronomy. But it was detected, at least by the esotericists of the world, as a radiatory field that was beginning to impinge and impact our solar system. Because of this impingement of these rays coming from this planet, which was in the process of externalizing, i.e. being recognized by science, the planet that was in a state of dormancy or decline or death, our moon, began to receive the vivification and electrification again of its life potency. It began to incarnate again. Now, eventually that's going to produce, when we look at our telescope at our moon, we're going to see, instead of a pockmarked whitish globe, we're going to begin to see increasingly a green energy that's going to eventually look like it's covered with green vegetation or moss. It's going to be the home of a new energization of plant life, new forms of insect life, new forms of, it's going to be a hothouse, like a hothouse for planet Earth. And it will be very interesting to watch it as it begins to incarnate into this dimension in this form and manifest in that way. By the same token, its influence and the influence of this planet that I've just spoken of that's in the process of emerging into our visibility spectrum, and it's perhaps, maybe, I don't know if it is Clarion or planet X or Y or Pluto or one of those. I don't think so. I think this is a different planet. But suffice it to say, what it will do to Earth is begin the same process. Our Earth literally will become reforested, revivified, and will emerge in a new outpicturing. The Native Americans have spoken about that in their prophecies, that after the time of the purification, the new dawn of the new planetary aspect or the new globe, the new world, will manifest in a beautiful outpicturing of clean and pure waters and beautiful forested areas and a lush and green topography. Now, whether this is actually another globe of the Earth, which I personally tend to believe it is, another sheath of the earth that we're moving into, or this third dimensional world that we're actually sitting in here. I think it's a dimensional rearticulation of the earth personally. But we're all in this and participating in this, so I guess we'll all be around to see more or less, at least either from this physical body or from the inner planes, what it's going to actually look like. But I want you to contemplate that a little bit, because we are in a very alive and vivid creation where it's impossible for anything to die or be utterly destroyed. What happens is that things go through cycles in which they're in centrophe and entropy, particles of chaos which cause the dissolution of forms that have served their purpose and the energization and electrification of new forms that are better suited to house the spirit that is constantly inquiring into life and manifesting through all of the forms that we see around us. Spirit is having an experience through form. All kinds of form, all kinds of experience. And that's the purpose of why we come into a world that has forms densified into third density compression. So in the decompression, so to speak, and the returning to a higher state of electrification and energy, we've spoken of the third dimension and the fourth. And bearing in mind we're in all of these dimensions all the time, and we move back and forth almost with the speed of thought, actually, in fact, from one densification of consciousness to another, depending on where we're focused. But let's say for the sake of our show, we are living in a fifth-dimensional world. That world is not going to be based out of expressing in the egocentric state. It's going to be a love-based and peace-based planetary expression, which we've been told will be the golden age. Sai Baba has many times said that the golden age is not a linear time, but it's a state of consciousness. So I can assume by that that there are many people living in the fifth dimension right now. And how would their lives be different than a person in the third dimension? Well, first of all, they will be living in the kingdom of heaven now. The kingdom of heaven, by biblical definition, is joy and peace and love and all of those qualities that would indicate a person living predominantly out of the self-realized state or the God-conscious state or at least out of the state of active goodwill. And in that state, we're not focused in body consciousness. We're focused more out of what could be called the unified heart center. And in the unified heart center, we express unity in diversity. In other words, we're headed to a world, not a one-world government. That's not what we want. We want a unity that is rich in cultural diversity. That's the ideal. We don't want a one-world religion. We want the one God to be adored and worshipped and recognized in a variety of cultural valences. I like Sai Baba's description that there's only one true religion, and that's the religion of love. I really think that sums it up. But we can have love expressed in a variety of religious, cultural, traditional expressions, and still be worshiping the one God and the one Christ or the one anointed one that really is the driving force of love behind all spiritual manifestations. So as we look beyond the form and we begin to appreciate the essence of what things are, we're coming more into the fifth dimensional frequency. Likewise, instead of having a one world government, which is way too much power for any one group of people to have, I believe the Native Americans have a much better approach, much closer to what the hierarchy has in mind, and that's regional councils of elders, the wisest men and women of a given area, community, will be elected and selected to sit in council. And in that way, each region has their council of representatives, with regional and perhaps larger conglomerates of what is similar to the Indian powwows, where they have regional gatherings periodically to cross-pollinate and to share ideas. That, in terms of how the spiritual masters behind our manifestations in this world are really seeking to guide humanity, so that every single person, every color, every creed, every type of expression is found in part of this beautiful mandala of light that the people of God are creating. And this is what we call truly the Aquarian ideal. We speak often of the Aquarian Age, and the Aquarian Age is simply a moving into a new confluence of energy streams that are impacting us, rays of energy, like the planets. The Aquarian energy, I'm not going to go into all of the planets that bring that energy to us because that's not the purpose of my show, but just as a basic overview, we're moving into a time when the group work and community and affiliations have the spotlight on it. This would be the 11th house influence of Aquarius. The rays that govern Aquarius, if I can remember from my many years ago study in the Arcane School, a little rusty here, but I believe, if I remember correctly, that the rays governing Aquarius are rays 2, 5, and 7. Assuming I'm right here, rays 2 would have to do with new educational forms that are emerging, new revelation about God, the process of enlightenment through meditation, study, inquiry, and spiritual research, cyberspace. Rig 5 would have to do with a new form of science that embraces the quantum mechanics, quantum physics, and the spiritual energies, so that you have a deeper understanding of the mysteries of light and sound and color and harmonic resonance. All of this would be part of the fifth ray, which is basically the ray of concrete science. But we need to get a little less concrete here and a little bit more in the mode of synthesis, where we see and realize that science and religion are really looking at the same thing from different angles and ray perspectives. And these are going to begin to blur in the influence of the Aquarian energy fields. The seventh ray has to do, again, with synthesis and rhythmic manifestations, whether you're looking at mathematical precision or marching or organizational protocols and flows or architecture or new city planning or actual rituals that are evocative using sound, mantra, and other forms of rhythmic cadence to cause manifestation. I think probably I can't quite reach for the name, but the science of studying the effects of sound upon malleable substance is what I'm thinking of. That is a manifestation of that seventh ray. So we're going to see emerging forms that use evocative gesture, i.e. dance, invocation, meditation, evocation, prayer, combined with the understanding of the flows of certain periods of time on the earth and in the cosmos, so that we can make a harmonic approach during certain times when the energies are appropriate for that particular approach, and in that way cooperate with the spiritual forces both on and off planet. And this will be a science that will begin to replace replace the more unconscious approaches that we use now, which are more based on supplication. Instead of supplication, we're going to move more into evocation, calling forth and anchoring a specific quality of manifestation. The fifth dimension is one in which you have made a decision in your heart to depart conflict. You have decided that peace is more important to you than being right, that loving has become the natural response to everyone and everything, that understanding and forgiveness replaces taking offense and being irritated and angry. You just began to lose that bite and fight inside you. You begin to move from a place of genuine harmlessness in intention. And that is, to me, the best description that I can think of in terms of the quality of the fifth dimension. Because as you hang out more and more in those Christ consciousness energy fields, you begin to have a sense of kinship with, truly kinship with all life. And at that place, you don't find it in you anywhere to want to harm anyone or anything by thought, word, or deed. So it's a place where you depart forevermore from being critical and judgmental. Obviously, you don't move into that state by just wanting to move into that state. You move into that state by raising your vibration repeatedly over and over and over again through meditation, through prayer, through worship, through whatever it is that you do to come near and dear to your true self and to God. But in that state, you gradually displace the perspectives and the energies that weave you into the lower density, and you begin to reweave yourself into the higher fabric and tapestries of light. And you begin to operate more from the higher chakras. And as you do that, the energies begin to lift and pass through until you activate the flame at the top of your head. And that flame at the top of your head means that you have transmuted all of the energies and the karmic fields that are attached to your lower chakras, and you're beginning to live in the higher consciousness of what we would call the Christ self or the Christ oversoul. And that is what we really are here as light workers to do. And when we have activated that flame above the head, then, of course, we are able to externalize the body in the moving of the spiritual inner awareness to higher levels and ways of manifesting ourselves. And some of us at that stage begin to find ourselves operating in 3 to 5 other bodies. That's an interesting experience. Try to pick out which one is your time lock agreement. But anyway, that's what we are in process doing now. We are transcending old ways of living. If you look at your life and you can't tell the difference between the way you think, the way you speak, the way you dress, and the way you live, and the rest of the world, then probably you're not being true to yourself. Because each person is very, very unique. And I believe that you find that uniqueness most observable in master souls. Those beautiful, enlightened men and women that I've been privileged to meet in my life they're as different as they can possibly be. There's no two saints that are alike, no two masters that are alike in any way, shape, or form, except in the consciousness of love and wisdom and clarity that they exemplify. Having said that, as you begin to really get to know yourself and what you're all about, you begin to get a sense of your own unique essence, your own flavor, your own particular natural way of manifesting your divinity, your natural gifts, your natural flow of extending your radiant spirit into life, the gift that you are and the way that you present that gifting into the world, you will begin to become more and more unique, more and more secure in your uniqueness, so that you don't have to call somebody up to ask them, can you tell me who I am? I think that's so sad when people don't know who they are, particularly if they're like 50 or 60 or something. It's like, hello, what have you been doing all your life? How could you have lived for 60 years and not know who you are, not know what your mission is? What have you been occupying your time with? And and you know, sometimes, I suppose, I can't imagine it happening in this time spell, but I suppose there are some people who are kind of on a rest in between intense incarnations. Maybe they come in without much to do, without much of a sense of mission. I think this is a strange time to pick such an incarnation, but I suppose it's possible. But my experience has been that people who come in with a mission pretty much have a sense of mission from the time they're young children. And it's interesting because as a soul, when you have selected a particular mission or a particular thing you want to do, if your personality and ego gets off on the wrong track, you'll interrupt it. You'll create some sort of a situation to interrupt that pattern and get yourself back on the right track. And sometimes if you don't get it in an easy way, that soul that you are will orchestrate quite a catastrophic event to get you back on the right track. So the bottom line here is to know yourself, to really know yourself, and to know that truth is that which sets you free, and that you are under no bondage except the bondage and limitation that you have agreed to allow in your life. At any point, you can step free through grace. Grace is available. That's like a big arm, like a deus ex machina, as they used to call them in the ancient Greek theater. When the hero would get himself in a real pickle, there would be this big, you know, arm, so to speak, that would come down and lift him up. So it's called the God machine. And we need that God machine, and we do have a God machine. It's grace. And that grace can lift you out of the deepest and most, quagmire of a pit if you call out and really, really want to step free. You will be given every assist possible to step free. But you do have to ask. No one's going to lay freedom on you if you don't want it. Freedom is not license, by the way, to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. Freedom is actually born out of perfect discipline of your nature so that you can depend on your mind, you can depend on your emotions, and you can depend on your body to be in alignment and in harmony with your soul's objective and directive and what you have come to do for God in a divine mission. You learn not to allow your lower self to rule or your inner child or your basic self. You'll learn to direct where your mind goes. You don't just let it sit like a fly on anything it wants without discrimination. You don't allow your emotions to stay in the doldrums and in negative states. You direct them. You channel them into positive ways. There's no need to allow your lower self to ruin your life and to usurp the time that you have, basically your health and your youth and your time to be of service to this planet. If you're all caught up in yourself and trying to constantly monitor your own personal flows and you haven't mastered yourself, then what service are you going to be to anyone? Not very much. You're going to be more in their way than a source of enlightenment and upliftment. So first we have to get our own ducks lined up and our own levels integrated and infused with light and truth and on purpose, and to where we can trust ourselves and the hierarchy, the masters, can trust us with those higher energies. And then we find ourselves doing some very beautiful things on the planet. Generally speaking, in terms of the Trans-Himalayan Brotherhood, which are the 36 masters that govern the evolution on this planet, largely from the Trans-Himalayan range and the primarily Shambhala. Generally, those particular masters will not work with a person beneath the age of 30 with any really powerful transmissions, because it takes you to the age of 30 to develop your chakra system, to mature the chakra system so that all of the centers can awaken. So those of you that are beneath the age of 30, be patient. Be patient. Don't be too crazy. Do what you can do, but realize that who you are is more precious than what you do. And the masters want to be certain that they don't burn you out before your time. About the age of 40, between 30 and 40, you start approaching nearer to your lineage of masters and the work you've come to do. And you'll find the work begins to deepen. By age 49, you're considered esoterically to be of age, meaning you have downloaded all of your previous equipment from your permanent atoms of your things that you need to present in this life. And by 50, the work can really, truly begin. So it's interesting, this work that we're doing actually improves, our ability to do it improves with our age. And even if you're a master soul, I find that you still more or less go through this process. We do have some very advanced and very new types of consciousness on the planet now with these children, the psychic children, the AIDS children, the indigos, the rainbows, the crystals. We have some very, very unusual children. And also the young charismatics that are like little Christ running around and doing incredible works of healing and very Christ-like work and intercessory work. There's a lot of young charismatic children that are quite on fire and spirit-filled and doing some incredible work right now. So we have quite a plethora of different types of souls, I think many of whom have either not taken an incarnation on Earth for a very, very long time, maybe not since the last golden age, and some that are very, very new to Earth itself and are just beginning to get a sense of how things function down here. So needless to say, we need some of these new second-ray educational forms to meet the needs of these extraordinary children. They should not be given Ritalin and other depressants. Many of them have ADD and dyslexia for the simple reason that they are not to be conditioned with obsolete educational forms. They are better given alternative schooling or homeschooling that matches their nature and their inclinations and not put into a standardized form of education. So our whole educational system is going to really have to shift to accommodate these very new souls coming in and to really not waste their time and to assist them in the work they've come to do. So when we begin to prioritize being the living love in this world, we have moved into fifth dimensional consciousness, which eventually will cause our vibration to raise out of the visual spectrum of the third density Earth. The physical plane is comprised of three visible bands of energy manifestation and four etheric bands of increasingly more subtle energy manifestation. So the masters who are in physical incarnation operate out of those subplanes that are invisible to the average third-dimensional sight. When our Earth ascends, it is actually moving up into an etheric physical, or the lowest level of the astral. We're not actually going to ascend very highly. We're in a gradual return. We're not going, bam, right back to the heart of God. In terms of our planet right now, we're just lifting slightly beyond the really dense outpicturing to a more altruistic outpicturing. Sai Baba and Jesus both have said that the transformation that's taking place is taking place through divine intervention in the hearts and minds of human beings. That it's an inside-out process of gradual transformation. And because of that, we are being prepared to move into those higher vibratory fields. People are waking up. They really are all over the planet. And very often they will very happily embrace the truth when it is presented to them. Everybody wants to have a better life. There's no one that doesn't want to be happy and have a better life. And the truth is many, many people on our planet live in very, very, very dire and deplorable circumstances. So there has to be divine intervention, otherwise we would just keep repeating these things over and over again. But fortunately, there is divine intervention, and people are right now exponentially awakening, and we can begin to look more and more for those signs of the new Earth appearing, even in the midst of the destruction. The newness is growing up, just like new shoots of grass begin to follow the recent rains in those areas that have been so burnt by the fires. You'll notice almost immediately the new shoots start to come up. And just like that, wherever there's been destruction, the new will begin to arise. Don't be worried too much about this talk about global warming. The warming of the planet has actually been prophesied but it is temporary. It's a temporary warming of the planet. Eventually, we will move into a more temperate planet where there's neither the extremes of heat or the extremes of cold, and that's more of the ideal. And the masters of the hierarchy have said for some time now there's no such thing as a hole in the ozone, and there's really no danger in the warming of the planet right now and the melting of the ice caps. So even though it does pose a environmental challenge to the wildlife that's used to having that type of area, and also the shorelines that are used to having more shore to live on and to perch their houses on, there will have to be an adjustment and a change. We have to know that certain things are really beyond man's doing. Man really we haven't lived as really wise custodians, but we haven't been that awful either. We're not as bad as some people make us out to be. And there are, again, stewards of the ecological movement that have implemented very wonderful systems, and there has been a gradual amelioration of the way that we have been doing things. We have to keep it up because the new world that we are moving into is created through human hands and feet. It isn't a matter of someone from another planet landing on our planet and showing us how to do it right. We are the ones who have landed on the planet, and we are here to live in the right ways that foster the well-being of all people and all life forms. And we start in our own home. We start in our own life. We start in our own lifestyle choices. So each one of us is the way that God is going to import his kingdom upon earth and manifest it. So we can make our own home a manifestation of the kingdom of heaven on earth. We have an office that we do our business in, and I'm suggesting that we create a place to do business with the higher forces. Most of us have a computer and a desk and a place where we do our write our bills and do our emails and so forth. But do we have a place where we go that's very sacred, where we can depart from the world, that all levels of our being know that when we sit down in that chair or go into that area or go off in that spot in the woods or wherever it is that we go, that that's where we commune and have sacred time, sacred space. So try to create a sacred space in your home, in your life, a place for divine communion, a place where you can bring together your higher thoughts and your best thoughts and not import the world and its concerns, a place that when you go there, it's for the purpose of attuning to the highest energy field that you possibly can and aligning and integrating that energy that you're being fed with as you make room for it to come and court you. If you make room for that energy, it will indeed come, and it will indeed court you, and it will indeed marriage with you, and you will indeed become one with that divine beloved that you look to. So, another thing I wanted to share is we've been doing a lot of out-of-body work in sending light to the planet, and I was just thinking of something that I used to do in my workshops that we all liked very much, and that was to have a globe. You can get them at Walmart or any, there's lots of stores that sell these world globes. And you can get a hard, you know, hard-shelled one, or you can get the kind that you blow up. And what you can do is when you're doing your prayer work or your chanting, you place your hands on those areas of the world that you want to send the light to. And you can chant the hue, or any mantra that you feel guided to use, or the Om or Shanti or whatever, and begin to chant and let the energy just flow through your hands into that place on the earth that you're touching. You can do that same thing with, sometimes people send me prayer requests, or they ask me to pray for their children or to work with them in some way. I will, if I have their picture, I will use their picture. If I have a letter or something they've written, I will use that. But I will just sit and put my hands over their frequency and send them the light and pray for them. You can also do that by placing a picture of someone, a loved one that you want to particularly keep in the light. You can put it on your altar. You can put it under a picture of your your chosen image of the Lord. You can park it under, you know, a crystal, a healing crystal. There's many, many ways that you can utilize your sacred space to make it the place where you do business with the Lord and with the things of the kingdom of God. And I highly suggest you create that. It will really help you to keep your focus, too, in the higher realms of light. When you are able to see and sense a negative, depleting, energy-depleting mood come upon you, quickly get up and shift the energy. Put on music. Go out, if you can, and just do some deep breathing outdoors. Don't sit and let it come. Get up. Move your body. Call in the light. Shift the energies. Chant. Do something. But don't allow yourself to be victimized by your by valences of consciousness. Some of them may be yours, and some of them may be energies that are wafting from your neighbors or the area that you're in, or you may have picked up something in a store. Astral attitudes and energies are very contagious. Irritation is contagious. Joy and laughter is contagious. So be positive in your contagion. If you're going to spread something, spread mirth and joy and laughter and enthusiasm and light and hilarity. But if you're going to be in a negative mood, don't allow yourself to infect this planet, which has already got way too much negativity. But learn how to take responsibility for that energy and to shift it. You do that through taking a deep breath, asking for the light to come in and to clear any unbalanced energy that doesn't serve your highest good. You forgive yourself for stepping out of balance or doing whatever you did that you feel you shouldn't have done. Don't dodge and avoid. Don't try to deny it. Don't sidestep it. Just deal with it, clear it, and move on in the love that you truly are. In that way, you can do one of the best services for this planet that you could possibly do. They asked the masters, one of the masters of the Trans-Himalayan Lodge one time, how best they could be of service on the planet. This was a disciple. And he said, you serve us best by good humor and a kindly disposition. So as we practice kindliness, random acts of kindliness or benevolent embracement of everyone and everything around us, allowing everybody to be what they need to be and to do what they need to do, being selective in where you place yourself and how you express yourself, then we begin to live in active goodwill and active benevolence, which is a form of divine love. We cease being the critiquer and the criticizer and the judger of what other people do. Really, truly speaking, it's none of your business. Unless, of course, you see someone being abused or injured that's defenseless and needs assistance. Or you're appointed as a policeman or a judge or a lawyer or someone that's in that field or an investigator. But if you're the average person, the average light worker, your work is to do business with the higher forces of light, both within yourself and in being an administrator of those divine forces as you move out amongst humanity. We can always use the light and make things much easier for ourselves. We use the light when we drive on the freeways. If we see an accident that has occurred, we send light to those people for their highest good. We ask that the energies of the accident be cleared, any fear, any death, any energies of chaos that have been released by that collision. We ask that it be cleared in the light for the highest good. And that's all you need to do. It can be very simple, or you can chant Hue with the intention that the light clear whatever is imbalanced. When I moved to a certain area of the planet, I noticed that there was just a tremendous amount of accidents on the freeways. And so I started chanting and asking for the light to clear the freeways every time I would drive out on them. And I would chant you or wherever I would go. And I would, if I would see those crosses along the side of the road that indicated an accident, I would ask that if there was any earthbound souls, that the angels escort them to the higher realms. You know, things of that nature. And during the years I lived in that area, I noticed that the accidents got less and less until it was rare that you heard of an accident on those same freeways after a few years. So our work individually becomes a collectivity, because remember, there's a lot of us doing this work. And there is more and more power as each one of us adds our contribution to the whole. It does make a difference. It does have a tremendous impact. And we truly then become what Jesus told us that we were and are, which is the light of this world. So do be the light of this world. And the greatest light in your physical body is when you smile. And the greatest power when you're in your physical body is your loving. And love truly is sufficient for all things. Love truly never fails. And as you go forth with this, just this attitude of active benevolence towards life, towards people, towards situations, towards yourself, this compassionate understanding that all things are the way they are because all things are in process of unfolding in perfection. Perfection in time and space is a gradual unfolding. So allow people that gradual unfolding. Be patient. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with others. Truly, I tell you, all that is marked for you will find its way to you. You don't have to worry about that. It's a law. Whatever is yours will find you in perfect timing. Those things that are problematic in your life, these are the areas that the universe is putting its thumb on. These are areas for you to work out. These are unfinished karmic knots that need to be untied by your conscious, diligent application of patience, understanding, acceptance, working with what you can work with, releasing what you can't, and stepping free through grace. As you do that, you will find that the areas that used to be problematic and difficult for you, suddenly they won't be an issue anymore. They'll just sort of lose all of their bite, and you'll wonder what the big fuss was all about. And that's when you know the karma is clear. You'll suddenly go from confusion and doubt and hassle and problem to just clarity and embracement. So that's what we strive for, and we do that by taking life by the horns, you know, confront it right on. We don't dodge the issue, and we learn to communicate from a heartfelt space without intent to harm, but in stating our preference, stating our boundaries, stating what we would like to have happen in different situations, first to God and to ourselves, and then to the person or persons that are involved in our lives. We can do that in a calm way, in a centered way, without making anyone wrong, but simply stating, this doesn't work for me, and this is what would work for me. Can we come to some sort of agreement here? In that way, we will begin to exit the arenas of conflict that keep us tied into the third and fourth dimension. If we're going to be living in a world, which Sai Baba said will be purely love and peace, with no crime and no negativity such as we know it today, that's how he defines this age, which he said we moved into already, then this is how we individually can start to live from that place and that space. And when you're not centered, don't speak. Don't do anything when you're not centered in your loving heart. Go apart. Go somewhere. Go to the restroom. Do whatever you have to do. Step outside for a few minutes. Call in the light. Clear yourself. And center yourself back in your loving space. In that way, you'll find that you become consistently operating in the fifth dimension. And pretty soon it will become a habit, and you'll wonder what it was like. Well, don't wonder too much, or you'll go back to it. But you will be surprised that there was ever any other way for you to live. It will become so wonderful. And then that will spread and spread and spread. I was reading a book, which I highly recommend, called At the Threshold of the New World, The Dreams, Visions, and Letters of Helena Rorick. Many of you know that Helena Rorick is my spiritual mother, and I was a close friend of the Rorick family, her son, Svetoslav, and his wife, David Garani, for 22 years. And he was a mentor, definitely a mentor for me in my young years and as I was growing up in this work. And she said in that book that on October the 17th, 1949, Armageddon ended. The enemy of humanity, Satan, was defeated and driven out of this solar system, and the new era had thus begun. So, that's an interesting thought, because it's possible that chronologically, we're not exactly in the same time that, well, I think that's probably true if you read all the different channelings and perspectives out there, which I don't, but I'm aware that they're out there. Obviously, we're not looking at the same timeline or the same time cycle. So I just think it's a good idea to move into the golden age now and live in the kingdom of heaven now and not wait for 2011 or 2012 and whatever. Just assume that some of these great souls, and Helena Roark was perhaps the greatest soul that has lived in the last, certainly the last century on this planet, greatest instrument of the hierarchy, great adept. So I'm going to go with that. That sounds good to me. And let's just exit the arenas of conflict and discord and disharmony and be the living love on this planet. That's, I think, the best choice we can make. So looking at some of the exercises we might want to do, I do suggest you create a sacred place if you haven't already done that in your home. An easy way to do that is to have a chair for the master and put a picture of the master on that chair and let that be the place where the master sits. And you put a chair opposite him or her and you speak your heart to that person every day. And I know in our family we always had a master's chair as far back as I can remember. There was always a place set at the table for the Christ, and there was always a chair that was the master's chair. So that's a very beautiful practice that you can adopt. And or an altar, just create some sacred space where you can meet with the Lord on a regular basis, or an area in your garden perhaps, whatever. It doesn't matter where it is. It's that you have a sacred place that you can go to. Today we would like to, as a group of light workers, send the light to the Pacific Northwest here in North America, where we've had some very, very bad storm that came through and left a lot of flooding. We want to send the light to the United States, the southern part of the United States, southeastern states, which are in devastating drought. We know that prayer has shifted some of that in one of the areas where the governor got a group of people to pray, and it rained. Within 24 hours, they had a good rain. But it needs a lot more rain. So needless to say, it needs a lot more prayer. So bear that in mind when you send the light. Send the light to areas in Africa where funds have been withdrawn for feeding programs. Bangladesh, which is just beyond devastation, beyond anything we could imagine. Just really wear the earth in your heart. Hold the earth and all of her people in your heart. Just bring her right into the center of your being and love and love and love. And we send the light from our heart, with all of our heart, to all of those people in areas that are suffering, that have had devastation, that are going through earth changes and purifications, that have lost family members, that are suffering in a variety of ways, through ignorance or neglect or man's inhumanity to man. We send the light to all the hotbeds of discord and dispute. We ask that the angels of divine peace descend and move about the men and women on this planet and help us to find that place of preciousness where we can all come to agreement that life matters more than conflict and discord. We send the light to all the planetary leaders, to our president in the United States, and to all the heads of state, wherever they may be in the world, that we can come under the divine plan in a way that leads us all into a world that we can enjoy and have for our children and our children's children. And as we chant the hue, let's just send our love and light to all of these places. Take a deep breath. you.